It was last week. We're having to quick pace this a little bit, and there's things we're going to miss and skip over. We're just kind of hitting the high spots. We're already behind. I think we're supposed to be on chapter 6 tonight, but we're really just on chapter 4. So I'm going to try tonight, if I can, to get through chapter 4 and 5. That's a lot of information, but we might try it. I don't know how successful we'll be, but we're going to give it a shot. Chapter 4, and I would encourage you to read the things that we miss, because there's a lot of information in this book. It's a wealth of wisdom, a wealth of knowledge in the things that we're studying. We're going to skip down in chapter 4 to verses 4 through verse 6, and we're going to look at those verses first. And then we'll do some extra reading as we go through this particular chapter. Remember our words that we discuss. I think it's important when you're reading the book of Ecclesiastes that you realize from where Solomon is talking. Solomon's talking to those that are without God. He's trying to seek pleasure in the world, and the things that he says and the points that he makes are made that way because life without God is really a worthless life, okay? And that's the mentality that Solomon is writing from in this book, okay? When we get to chapter 6, he's going to kind of rehearse the things that we've been over and continue the thought until we get toward the end of the book, okay? So just remember from what perspective Solomon is writing the book of Ecclesiastes. That helps us understand more. When we talk a lot about depressing things in the book, that's because he's writing from the perspective of one whose life exists without God. Okay? So that's why things seem to be so pessimistic in the book. Chapter 4, verses 4 through verse 6. Again, I saw that from all toil and every skillful work, a man is envied by his neighbor. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind. Verse 5, the fool folds his hands and consumes his own flesh. Verse 6, better a handful with quietness than both hands full together with toil and grasping for the wind. So in verses 4, 5, and 6, there's three scenarios I take from these particular verses, okay? The first one is, in verse number 4, that I saw that for all toil and every skillful work, a man is envied by his neighbor. That's the first scenario. And we know how true that is. You know, there's always people who are envious of others who perhaps have more than they do, okay? And that's not typical for everybody. There's a lot of people that are content, but there's probably a lot more people who aren't happy with what they have, and they are always looking at their neighbor, always trying to keep up with their neighbor. The Joneses, you know, we're going to keep up with the Joneses because they got a new car. We're going to get a new car. So, you know, it always seems to be a life when materialism is all you work for. It always seems that you're trying to better up somebody else. And that's what Solomon is talking about here. But we understand as Christians, where the world does not, where the world is their God, that happiness isn't based on what your neighbor has. Because there's people that I know and people that we work for, I'll never be able to acquire what they have. Never. And most of us never will. We were working today on a job, and it was in this subdivision called Cobblestone. Anybody ever heard of Cobblestone? It's over in Simpsonville area. And I just like to look, you know, when these humongous houses are for sale. So I went over there and looked at it and looked at the paper. And it wasn't, if you were selling my house, you open that little box and they got the one little flyer in there and it probably ain't in color. Well, this one was a book. And I guarantee the house was probably well over $1 million. And they had movie rooms and screening rooms and their walk-in closet was 19 feet by 10, which is bigger than my bedroom. So you can't always up other people. And to be honest with you, and I would say most of you folks here would agree, that don't do nothing for me. It don't. And a lot of y'all would probably, if not all of you, would be the same way. It's a gaudiness. You know, it's I'm better than the neighbor next to me. And the guy that we were working for, his house was selling for probably close to $900,000. So you just try to up the person down the street. And that's what Solomon is saying here. People envy their neighbor because of what they got. But he changes gears in verse number 5 and goes to the extreme. Okay? Verse number 5, he says, the fool folds his hands and consumes his own flesh. So the extreme of those people in Cobblestone would be what? What's the extreme of that? Verse 5. Okay, he doesn't do anything. Okay? So he's content to live in a tent or to live under a bridge. And sometimes, not always, but sometimes people are just sluggards. They're lazy. They're slothful. They just don't care. They have no drive. They have no desire. Okay? So that's the extreme that Solomon says. The high haughty, then the low sluggard who is just too lazy to work. And if you look in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 6, somebody read that right quick. 2 Thessalonians 3, verse 6. Some of you might know it by heart, I don't know. 2 Thessalonians 3, verse 6. What does Paul say to the church at Corinth? Yes, sir. 2 Thessalonians 3, verse 6. Okay, so the New King James says, ye withdraw yourselves from every brother that walketh disorderly. Do you know who he's talking about in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 6? That is a generic passage that applies to many different things. But if you back up into that chapter, who's he talking about that they were to withdraw from? Who was it? The person that was lazy. The person that was slothful, the person who wouldn't work and support his family, those were the ones Paul was saying, you need to withdraw from them. So the Bible condemns those that are haughty, but the Bible also condemns those that are slothful, who are lazy and don't work. So verse 4 is diligence with sorrow. Verse 5 is slothfulness with sorrow. But he finds a medium ground in verse 6. And this is what he says. Better a handful with quietness than both hands full together with toil and grasping for the wind. What does he mean? What does he mean? Okay, you got to have a little balance. It's better a handful with quietness than both hands full with travail or trouble. So what does he mean by that? Expound on what Brother Jeremy said. What does he mean, Brother Chuck? Exactly. Be content with what you've got. Okay? Enjoy the blessings that God has given to you. Don't be slothful, but don't get to the point to where we're always striving to acquire things that we really don't need. You know, the Bible says, Jesus says, having food, raiment, food, clothing, and shelter, we ought to be what? Be content. Okay? I think I've told y'all this before, but if I have, just bear with me. I remember years and years and years and years and years ago, we lived in a mobile home, 14 by 68 wide. We were a little better off than the Moody's or the, what's your dad's name? Him. They lived on the lower part of the trailer park, and we lived on the upper part. So we were ahead of the Stevens. You know, we were the upper trailer. They were the lower trailer. Not that we were better than them. The plane just went up a little further. They had the deck and all that stuff. But anyway, we didn't have much. We have a lot more now than we had then because we had three children and so on. But you look back on it, and boy, those were great times. And you ask Mac and Vicky, they'll tell you the same thing. Okay? You don't have to have a lot of stuff to be content. Paul says in the book of 2 Timothy 6, or 1 Timothy 6, 6 through 8, we mentioned this passage before. What does Paul say? We brought what? Okay, we brought nothing into the world, and we'll take nothing out of the world. And he says in verses 6 through verse 8, having food and raiment, let us be what? But content. Okay? So that's what Solomon is trying to get us to see in verses 4 through verse 6. If you want to look at a little preview, you can write this down because when we get to it, we probably won't hit it much. In chapter 6 and verse number 9, flip over to that right quick. Somebody read that. Chapter 6, verse 9. What does that mean, Jeremy? What does that mean? All right. Better is the sight of the eyes, the New King James says, than the wandering of the desire. What does that mean? What does that mean? Isn't that what he says in verse 6? Chapter 4, verse 6? Better is the sight of the eye than the wandering of the desire. And in other words, it's better to have what you have and what you can see and what you can touch than the wandering of the desire, trying to get that which you can't have, okay? Yeah, that's exactly what it means. A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. You've got what you've got. Be content with what you've got and don't search for things that you'll never have. You know, there's things in this life we'll never have. None of us. Okay, there's things in Solomon's life Solomon never had and never would acquire. Okay, even though he had great wealth, there's always something more that people could have. Brother Chuck. That's true. Yes. And that's a good point, Brother Chuck, because if we do things for the Lord, we don't worry about acclaim or what a great job you're doing. We're doing it because we're doing it for the Lord. And that's a good point. Good point. Anybody else got a thought? All right. Skip down. Let me make sure I've got everything. Skip down to verse number 8. Verse 8. He says, there is one alone without companion. He has neither son nor daughter. There is no end to all his labors. Nor is his eye satisfied with riches, because he never asks, for whom do I toil and deprive myself of good? This also is vanity and a grave misfortune. All right, what do you think he's saying here? There is one alone without a companion. He's going to have son or brother. He don't have family. Yet there is no end to all his labor, nor is his eye satisfied with riches. What do you think he means here? Do you know of anybody got a thought on that? Do you know of anybody who don't have a family or a companion, anybody. They don't have anybody. And their whole life is consumed by their work or the desires that they try to have to fulfill themselves. Anybody know anybody that way? I know a guy, and some of you know him as well. His mom and dad had a lot of money. Had a lot of property. Bunch of property. And they kept it and kept it and kept it and kept it. And when they died, he sold it and got millions for that property. Now, the point being, what good does it do to have something if you don't use what you got? I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but the point is, if your companion is what you have, and you don't use what you have to benefit and to bless others in many different ways, what good is it? What good is it? I mean, in actuality, it's not good at all. Somebody turn to the book of Psalms. The psalmist kind of says the same thing in Psalms chapter 39, verses 4 through verse 6. Psalm 39, verses 4 through verse 6.
Is as nothing before you. Surely all mankind stands as a mere breath. Selah. Surely a man goes about as a shadow. Surely for nothing they are in turmoil. Man heaps up wealth and does not know who will gather.
The last part, I think, is what Solomon is saying. Verse number 6. He heaps up riches and does not know who will gather them. What does he mean by that? He heaps up riches, but he doesn't know who will gather them. Brother Sam?
I think an example of that can be found in Luke chapter
12,
verses 15 through 21. The rich man and his barn. Mm-hmm. He broke down a smaller barn, built a bigger barn, and the Lord called him a fool because he was not rich toward God.
Yeah.
And when he died, who inherited that?
Who does he leave it to?
Right.
And that is vanity. You know, you keep all this stuff, you build all this stuff up, but yet you leave it to somebody else, okay? And that's what Solomon is saying, and that's what even the psalmist says in Psalm chapter 39. All right, verses 9 through verse 12. Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labors. If they fall, one will lift up his companion, but woe to him is alone when he falls. For he has no one to help him up. Again, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? Though one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand him. A threefold cord is not quickly broken. Now, you've probably heard this in lessons before. If you had to pick a word out, what would the word be that Solomon is trying to get across here? What would be the word? Okay, unity, all right? Anybody else? How about companion? Companionship, okay? I want to look in this verse, verses 9 through 12. I want to look at three areas of companionship, okay? And these are very familiar to all of us, and we're going to hit each one of them briefly. But when you think about companionship, what's the first thing that comes to your mind? Okay, husband and wife, marriage, okay? And let me say this to those people like Lori and Ashley and all you other young people with children that's married, which you are. Nathan, Glenn, all you folks. Jeremy, Stephen. I want you to understand something. Your wife was there before your kids. And your wife will be there after your kids. What do I mean by that? What would you take from that statement? Yeah. That's it. And I know it's easy, and you know, those of us who are older understand this. Brother Buddy and Kelly know how this is because they've got kids and they've raised their children and the kids are gone. But it's so easy, young people with children, and Brother Chuck knows, and Stephen, Hope, y'all know. It's so easy sometimes. Am I doing something wrong? Oh. It's so easy sometimes to get so involved in your children. It is. You get so involved in your children that you don't have time for one another. And sometimes the husband's put on the back burner. Sometimes the wife's put on the back burner. And you're so consumed with your children that you really forget about one another. Not intentionally, but you forget about one another. And I know it's hard to balance things, but you need to understand that your wife will be there after your children's gone. When your children one day will be gone. They will. Unless they come back like some do, you know. But Julie, your kids will be gone one day. You know. As far-fetched as that may sound, and all it's going to be is you and Dustin. Now, if you've neglected that part, then I've heard the statement read in books and stories and stuff that when the kids leave, they don't really know who one another is. Could that be true? Because there's nothing there, that the companionship is gone, okay? So, Mike, that's what I thought about companionship was marriage. In Genesis chapter 2 and verse 18, anybody know what that says right quick? Genesis chapter 2, verse 18. Okay. Therefore what? I'll make a helpmeet for him. I don't want to talk about this forever, but why did God make woman? Why? Okay, companionship. Okay, now we know about procreation and all these other kind of things. We know about all this stuff, okay? But to me, my opinion is the main reason God made woman is for companionship, okay? It's not good for man to be alone. Every other animal had their own had their own kind and stuff, but man was left alone. And God made woman for companionship. Now, that's not to say that man doesn't need companionship, because he does. But that's why God created the woman, because man was incomplete without her, right? And she made him complete, all right? I'm going to tell you a story, a precious story. And this one I may have told to you before, but listen. Several years ago, I had the privilege, the honor, of getting a call from a lady who was a member of the church in Massachusetts. And her mom and dad were, they weren't Catholics, but they were, what's the step below the Catholics? Episcopalians. They're a step below. If you didn't know that, they are. But anyway, they were Episcopalians. And she said, would you go over to their house and study with them? I said, well, I'd be glad to. Now, at this time, he was 90 plus. And she was mid-80s. So me and Brother David Vermilion went over there and studied with them a while. And after our studies and our studies and our studies, I can't remember how long we studied, those two people at that ripe age obeyed the gospel at 90 and 85. I had the privilege of baptizing her, and she was so feeble, that I had to just ease her down in the baptistry and bring her up. I mean, Brother Norbert, just a great, great man. We took them out to eat. We'd go to their house. Wonderful people. About 7 years later, she got real sick. Real sick. And they brought a hospital bed into the house. They lived off of River Road. And Pagan and I would go over there and see them and talk to them and try to encourage them. And Brother Norbert, one time, when she was unable to talk and get up, Brother Norbert asked Peggy, he said, she's not gonna make it, is she? And Peggy said, no, she's not doing very well. They had been married 72 years. It was to the point to where he was a part of her. You understand that? I mean, I know you. He was a part of her, and she was a part of him. So Brother Norbert went to the restroom and come back. She died on a Monday. He died on a Tuesday. And they had a funeral. And they had a double funeral. She was here and he was here, back or head to head. That's companionship. He could not see living without her. Folks, that's the way it's supposed to be. I remember Darcy's mom and dad. This is a long time ago. Help me out, Darcy. What's her name again? Elsie and Brother Cole, Marion Cole. And I remember seeing them come to church services, and he would hold the door for them, and they wouldn't make much speed, but he'd hold her hand, and it was so nice. To me, that's companionship. That's what God meant in Genesis chapter 2 and verse 18. That's companionship, okay? So, but there's another one, friendship, and I'll just hit this briefly. Someone that we need to confide in, someone that will help us, okay, that will encourage us, someone we can trust that can help us. But there's one more. Anybody want to take a guess what the other one, companionship, would be? What would be something that involves companionship? Easy. How about the church? The church. Now, I want you to turn with me to a couple of passages. I'm going to give these out. Somebody turn to Galatians 6, 1 through 2. Who wants to get that? Somebody raise their hand. Galatians 6, 1 through 2. Anybody? Raise your hand. Brother Chuck. Hebrews 10, verses 24 through 25. All right. And while they're turning to that, as far as companionship and the church is concerned, the church is as close or should be as close almost as a marriage relationship, right? How do I know that? Okay, what did he say? He made a... Okay, he's the bride of Christ. In the book of Ephesians chapter 5, he says the relationship the husband and wife have is the same relationship that Christ has with his church, right? Okay, now that's the way I think we ought to look at it, okay? The relationship a husband has with his wife is the relationship that Christ has with his church. And, you know, we say this a lot. We say it a lot. But, and I'm not questioning when we say it, but do we really mean, and we sing a song, Brother Clint's led this song, we're part of a family, God's family. Do we believe that, and do we honestly act like we believe that? Because that's companionship. When I've got trouble, I need to go to somebody I can talk to. That's a family. That's what families do. Now, why would you say somebody's not willing? If I got a problem and I got an issue and it's something that involves men, okay, and I need to talk to Nathan, okay? What might be some reasons, and I'm just using Nathan as an example, what might be some reasons I would not talk to him? Why? I don't trust him. Not that I don't. I don't trust him. Why would I not trust him? Okay. Maybe he's betrayed it or something. Okay. What else? Why else would I not go to him? I just don't know it. Okay. And I don't know where I can talk to him or not. Anything else? Maybe I won't talk to Nathan because I know if I talk to Nathan before the next Sunday, everybody else will know about it. Is that possible? That's possible. Okay. So as a family, we got to build trust, okay? We got to build that companionship. Now, these two passages that I mentioned, I mentioned them for a purpose, okay? Now, me and my wife, she'll defend me, and she'll love me, but I know every man in here's got a wife. Your wife will do this too. What else will she do? She'll love you, she'll defend you, but what else will she do? Huh? Well, nag you, we know that. But the husband does too. But what was that? Somebody said it, Jeremy. She'll tell me when I'm wrong. Will your wife do you that way, Clint? See? What? Yeah, she'll do it. She will tell you when you're wrong. Okay? Now, you know, I love it when she'll defend me, and I love it when she loves me, but do I love it? Does it mean that when she tells me I'm wrong or I tell her she's wrong, does that mean, well, wait a minute, you don't love me because you're telling me what I'm doing is wrong. Exactly. She tells me what I'm doing wrong because she loves me and I love her, right? Right, Hope? Okay. Well, that's true. That's true. All right, so you see the point. Love and companionship. You know, love is not just, oh, hugs and kisses and, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's not just that. That's part of love. That's great. That's great. But I love my children. I love my grandchildren. But and they love me. I know they do. But we don't hug and kiss all the time. We'll say, hey, Haley, you need to straighten up. You need to, you know, you don't need to act that way. Buddy, whatever. Eric, Lori, Adam. That's love. That goes in that circle. Same scenario applies to Scripture. How do I know that? Galatians 6, verses 1 and 2, Brother Chuck.
Brethren, even if a man is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself, lest you too be tempted. Bear one another's burdens and thus fulfill the law of Christ.
So what's Paul saying? What's Paul saying? What's he saying? If I see a brother overtaken in a fault, you which are spiritual, restore such an one considering yourself, okay? Then he says in verse 2, bear one another's burdens. So the point is, if I don't know you or you don't know me good enough, how are you going to bear my burdens? We can't. It's easy to talk, but it's difficult to do. Okay? And, you know, we can't encourage one another. Brother Chuck, and I know you may be a little different because of your work schedule. What if you, well, maybe, I'll ask Buddy, okay, because you'll know what I'm talking about. If you saw your wife 4 hours a day or 4 hours a week, and I know you see your wife more than that, what kind of relationship would you have? Wouldn't work too good, would it? If we see one another 4 hours a week, how in the world are we going to build a relationship? We're not. I mean, we got to get involved with one another. You know, flea market, outreach, youth, whatever it may be. That's what gets us to know one another, okay? That's part of that companionship, okay? Hebrews 10, 24 and 25.
And let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near.
Now, we always quote verse 25, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another. Verse 24 is a prelude to verse 25. Let us consider one another to provoke one another to what? Love and good works, okay? So before we ever get to the services, we are to provoke one another to love and to good works. Coming together as God's people is a blessing, okay? That's how we encourage one another. That's how we uplift one another. That's part of companionship. Okay? That's part of companionship, Brother Clint.
I like that verse 24 gives us a path to that as well. It doesn't just say stir up one another to love and good works, because not everyone in this room is stirred up in the same way.
Right.
So the first part of the verse is crucial. Let us consider how to stir up.
Exactly.
If I'm trying to do something and I want to put some due diligence into it to determine the best way to do it, there's effort involved in that. There's again, research and those things that go into the best way to do something. You don't just dive in and start doing it, maybe the wrong way.
Right.
So to consider how to means, like you're saying, we've got to be invested and spend some time and work so that we can determine what stirs each other up.
All right. And that brings up another point. How can I provoke you and you provoke me this Lord's Day? How can you do that? How can you provoke me to love and to good works? Okay, right. But how can you provoke me to good works so that I will want to attend? How can you do that? Okay. Do you do it when you walk through the door Sunday morning for Bible study? Probably a little too late then, right? Brother Chuck. Okay. All right. What if, praying I think is a good thing, but what about spending some time with one another during the week, okay? What about, tonight, every one of us here say, hey, Peggy, we'll see you Sunday, Lord's willing. Is that provoking one another to good works? Does that hold one another accountable? You know, we'll see you, Lord willing. Not hope to see, but we'll see you Sunday morning, Lord willing, for Sunday morning services, okay? Or call somebody. People that we know who don't attend Bible study, who aren't faithful in their attendance, call them, encourage them, send them a card. That's provoking them to love and to good works, okay? That's what we do as a family. That's what we do when we really care about one another, okay? Here's a point in fellowship, in this fellowship. Say, for an example, that Brother Sam quits coming for 6 months. And none of us, not a one of us, call Sam. And lo and behold, Sam walks through the door 6 months and one day after he hadn't been here and no one of us has called him. And he comes through the door and I give him a hug and I say, Sam, I sure have missed you. You know what I'd think? Well, that's a lie. That's a lie. You hadn't missed me. If you missed me, what would you do? You'd call me. You'd check on me. You'd worry about me. You know, that's companionship. That's caring for one another, okay? And the reason why it doesn't mean much to some folks when they get withdrawn from it, because there's nothing they've been withdrawn from for. They're not losing anything. The whole purpose of disfellowship is that makes people miss what they had, okay? If you ain't got nothing, you don't miss what you never had. So that's part, and I'll spend more time on this, but that's part of companionship and caring and working and loving. We all of us need to do better, don't we? I think so, okay? Verse 13. Let's skip down to verse 13. We got just a few more minutes. Better a poor and wise youth than an old and foolish king who will not be admonished no more. What do you think that means? A poor and wise youth and an old foolish king who won't be admonished anymore. A young man that's wise is a lot better than a old man or an old king, or what does he say here, than an old king that won't be admonished anymore. Okay? I don't care how old you are. You don't know everything. Okay? And that's what Solomon is saying. Okay? We can't get to the point in our lives to where we think we know everything and we've done everything. people in the church. You know, Paul says to Timothy, he says, I pray that the younger women are taught by who? The older women, okay? We have women in the Lord's church who are 70 and 80 years old. Look at the wealth of wisdom those women have as far as being a wife, a mother, a grandmother. You know, and a lot of times when we think about getting teachers, we always think about the young people. Now, I know, you know, Julie, and I know, you know, Jeremy's wife. What's her name? I'm sorry, Jeremy. Ashley, yeah. And Lori, you know, those are the teachers. Well, I don't mean this in a bad way, but they don't know anything compared to Sister Goldie that's raised children, okay? They've been there. Sister Rebecca. We're wasting talent of people who know how to teach and who's been there. We don't ever retire from the Lord's church. We don't. I don't care how old we are. Now, we can slow down. I guarantee you, Glenn can do a lot more work in the Lord's church than Mike. Would you agree? But who would you think, who would you go to when you've got difficulties about life? Who would you go, and I don't mean this about Glenn, who would you go to, Mike or Glenn? I'd probably go to Mike. Wisdom helps if that older person is what? Wise, okay? And there's a lot of wise older men in this congregation and women as well, okay? Next week, we're going to start on chapter 5, and I promise I'm going to try to get through it, okay? Thank y'all.
Thank you for listening to the Augusta Road Church of Christ. Located in Greenville, South Carolina, the Augusta Road congregation worships God in spirit and in truth in a friendly and loving environment. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for Augusta Road COC. And if you're ever in Greenville, South Carolina, we would love for you to come by for a visit.